Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 233, recorded January 5th, 2014.
Happy New Year, everyone.
Happy New Year!
For those of you who are on our same calendar.
Yeah, which is most of you.
There's lots of people who do, like, Chinese New Year, too.
Do we have any listeners in China?
We have lots of Asian listeners.
At least right in!
Lots of Asian downloaders. Oh, we do have some who wrote in. Oh, I forgot to tell you about. Yeah, we have someone from India
who wrote in. About
it's
the beta
in the
video?
YouTube, yeah.
Oh, okay, so we'll do that one, too.
Yeah,
so
we'll do that one.
We have somebody on YouTube, and we have some communication from Mick, and some from Tony.
Mm-hmm. But we should tell you a little bit about our adventure last, when was it?
It was the Tuesday before New Year's Day.
So it was the day after we recorded the podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Last podcast.
Last podcast. Day not after. This one.
Yeah.
It was really cold.
It was really cold. It was the cold. The low temperature for the day was Fahrenheit 6 degrees.
Which we looked up Celsius, right?
Yeah, it's like negative 14.4 or something.
Yeah, it's cold. So the night before, there'd been really crazy winds outside. They said, 70 mile per hour winds?
Yeah, and so the wind chill factor made it even colder. Mm-hmm.
And the wind knocked down the power pole in our neighbor's backyard, which meant we had no power.
For a long time.
It went out at 1 o'clock in the morning, and it didn't come back on until 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Whew, and you can imagine how that was. It was not fun.
The house was about 54 degrees Fahrenheit.
And depending on where you were in the house, too. I mean, that was the warm part of the house. But it was getting steadily colder, and we were worried because, you know, our goldfish, okay, 54 degrees, no problem. Our African clawed frog, similarly, not a real issue. They're very hardy. But what about our bettas?
The bettas, the geckos.
And our geckos.
And just to add insult to injury, we went into Russ's office thinking that there would be, power and stuff. The lights were on. The heat was off there, too.
Right. We needed to make some phone calls. And the way it works at our house, we didn't have any phone at that point.
If the power's out.
When the internet was out. So, because our cell phones aren't really cell phones. They're Y-phones.
Anyways, so Russ's millipedes were freezing their little tootsies off.
Yep.
Because it was just as cold at his office.
We actually had to resuscitate them. We had kids warming them up in their hands.
Because
they're millipedes from the Philippines. They weren't used to that cold. We didn't lose anything.
Everything. Miraculously.
All the geckos, all the millipedes, everybody was good. All the fish, everybody.
But we brought the millipedes home in a little deli cup. And we got Tiki out and the baby geckos and put them in deli cups.
Mm-hmm.
And we shoved them all inside our jackets to keep them warm. And we went to the library because their power was on and their heating was on. So we were in the library with various geckos and millipedes and... But nobody saw. We didn't get in trouble.
I don't know if there's any rules against bringing millipedes and geckos anyway.
Probably not.
One thing we had going for us was that the aquariums lose heat rather slowly. So they stayed considerably warmer for considerably longer, and that helped. But they did begin to get rather cool, and I was starting to worry about the bettas. We, of course, called the utilities, and they said that the power should be on about 12:30, and we thought, okay, well, we should be fine. That should be enough. You know, we're not going to lose too much heat by that time. But by the time...
Except really didn't come on until 3.
Yeah, but everybody turned out fine. Mm-hmm. And not a fish lost a beat. Everybody's happy, so.
So that was good.
Yep. Even the bettas. Even the bettas are doing just fine, despite their dip down into, the 60s or whatever it was.
And Tiki got to have a field trip to the library.
Mm-hmm. So, we're glad that it all worked out.
And we had been corresponding with Mick, so he already knew about it. Mm-hmm. So his email starts out responding to that. And he says, that's not just cold, it's Arctic. And we totally agree. Really glad the power returned so quick and all the animals survived well. Good idea sharing body heat. Maybe you guys were all gerbils in a previous life, so the idea of all snuggling up with the pets was quite natural.
Okay. Part of the reason I have to tell you, Mick and I were corresponding during this period, is that he sent us a package.
With Fangs and Fiends t-shirts.
And the package happened to arrive the day we were having these problems.
Yes.
And so it brightened our day.
Yes, it was definitely a bright spot.
It had some lovely things. It had a Fangs and Fins t-shirt, had a microclimate t-shirt.
And mint
they're,
cake.
They're both matching black. And, yeah, with three different types of mint cake in.
Which I don't know if you told Mick or not, but as soon as the kids knew that there was mint cake in that package, then there was not very much mint cake anymore.
I know. Yeah, I did tell him that it was a great hit, even more so than the first time. I mean, the first time it was a hit. Mm-hmm. This time it was even more of a hit. So, because there were three different varieties.
Yeah. They were very excited.
And so what we're going to do this, we're going to... Well, there was also a Christmas card, and get this, it featured leopard geckos. So,
three leopard geckos.
Three leopard geckos with crowns. They were the three kings.
From, you know, the east.
Yeah, so it was...
The three wise geckos.
Yes, it was very fun. And I took a picture of it, too. So
did you put it up?
Put that up.
It was very cute. So thank you, Mick.
We were very excited, and it helped brighten our day. So that's why we were talking about that.
Mick also had an incident of good fish karma.
Oh, yeah.
He unfortunately needed to get some medical attention. But when they were at the hospital, he
got an accidental eye injury.
He did. He says, "Who did we see there on duty but one of our customers who buys all his fish and aquarium goods from us?" So he got good eye care because he had a good fishy customer.
We thought that was
cool. Hospital. That was good. So, and he also is going to be sending along some pictures from a trip to the zoo of theirs and his redesigned live planted bioactive gargoyle gecko tank.
Yeah, sounds cool.
Tell me about bioactive.
That's like what we have in there when we have all the little critters living in it that are breaking down things. And,
it's not coming out of my mouth right now.
Yeah.
Vivariums.
Right.
There we go.
And there are various terms used to describe it when you have, you know, springtails and isopods living in the soil that is an aerobic mix where there are also plants growing in it. Bioactive is one of the common ways to express that. So...
So he's going to send those on when they're ready. And he says, "Happy New Year to you, Kelly, and the kids, and to all out in Aquarimax land."
And then he has another email.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. He found his first morning gecko egg, which is exciting. But he says, "Unfortunately, it got damaged as it was behind the Exoterra background, and I didn't notice it until it got cracked along the bottom." They don't always lay them in very opportune spots.
Right. I think I've lost at least six eggs to them being laid in really inopportune spots. So.
He says, "I had to strip everything out as I discovered one of the adults on top of the light canopy outside the vivarium."
Uh-oh.
They're tricky.
They are.
Says, "I caught it and put it in a cricket tub and then checked to find out the cable guard hadn't been pushed in properly, leaving a gap just big enough for them to get out of."
They are quite the escape artists.
And he says, "I found two of the four, so there are two living free range in the shop somewhere." Do you want to know a funny thing? Okay, maybe some people won't think this was funny. Maybe some people will think it's gross.
Right.
I remember there used to be a pet store a little bit further south, down near Tom's Way, down in Provo. Can't even remember. What was that one called on Main Street? I can't remember.
Critter Outfitter?
Critter Outfitter, yeah.
Or it may have been Animark at the time.
Oh, but yeah. I don't remember. Anyways, there used to be a pet store. And, you know, they carried pet rats, which is pretty normal. But apparently, some of them at some point had gotten out and were just living in the building because you could always go in and watch them, like, sneak down the ceiling and the walls to where the rodent area was.
You
and,
look
like,
in the display
snitch lab
window.
Blocks.
Because they had some rodents in the display window in enclosures. But they'd climb down from the ceiling onto the platforms of the in the display window and nick the lab blocks and pop back up.
And they were all, I mean, they weren't wild rats. They were all fancy rat colors.
Mm-hmm.
But they had gone feral.
It was kind of funny.
It was kind of funny. So they were leaving free range in the shop, too.
Now, I've heard about people having free range mourning geckos in places like that. Of course, we had them in Hawaii all the time, but it would be interesting to see if they establish in the shop.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be too surprising, because
that would be cool.
A shop carrying reptiles tends to be a pretty good place for them to live, and they can, I'm sure they can find, you know, the odd escaped cricket and little bugs and stuff. Especially if you put out some crested gecko diet for them.
Oh, that's true.
They probably do pretty well.
Maybe they could take them back home.
Yeah. You might be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. He says, I decided to set the remaining two up in an Exoterra Nano Terrarium, the 12x8x8 glass one, and bring them home. So they're not going to be in the shop anymore, I guess. They're just going to be at his house. So I was wondering if you shield the eggs or remove the adults to avoid babies being eaten, or do you just try to catch the babies once hatched? Any advice welcome so I can be prepared when the next eggs appear.
Well, this is what I've noticed. That generally they lay the eggs in a place that is very difficult to shield them. Because a lot of times people will take a tiny little deli cup, like the ones that we used to feed Tiki.
Mm-hmm.
The really tiny, tiny deli cups.
So like an inch, inch and a half across at the widest top part?
Yeah, and maybe half an inch or less deep. And they will tape them over the eggs. Maybe poke a tiny little bit of ventilation hole in it, mm-hmm. two or three ventilation holes in it first.
So the grown-ups can't get to
and them. When they hatch, you just check and say, oh, there's the baby, and you can take
that's
it out.
That's a good idea. I guess it only works, though, if they lay it in a place where you can actually do that.
Right, which does not happen often with ours. I've never been able to do that, in fact, because they always put them
right in, like, the corner.
Right along the rim where there's no place you can put a cup over. It'd be pretty hard to do. So
they do like to lay them up in the corners of the very rims of the tank.
Yeah, that's where almost all the eggs have been laid. So, something I have done is used floral tubes. I can go to the floral shop and buy, you know, a floral tube for a quarter and tape it up in the corner of the tank. And I have had them lay a few eggs in there. Like, not the most recent clutch, but the one before that was laid in a floral tube. And I just was able to remove that and put the lid back on it, which is kind of a flexible silicone-y sort of lid without a ventilation hole in it. That's small enough they can't get out of it. And then when that baby's hatched, I just
that was Vin.
Put them wherever. No.
Vin
that was,
hatched in one of those, didn't she?
Nope.
No?
No, Vin didn't. She hatched in that incubator over there.
Oh, okay.
Because the egg fell.
Oh, that's right.
And so I moved it to an incubator, and that hatched outside, too. So once in a while, I've had that happen. But, so I think if you can shield the egg with a deli cup, it's a good idea, but they're often laid in places where you can't. And they don't always lay them in the floral tubes. I think out of the... I put the adults in a temporary vivarium and put floral tubes in there. And out of the four or five clutches they laid in the time they were in that, three of them weren't laid in the floral tubes. Two of them were. Out of the two that were, only one hatched.
So
one of the eggs was infertile and the other one cracked prematurely. So... it wasn't terribly successful. I mean, it was for the two that hatched, but it wasn't a great track record, I thought.
Basically, you can try it, and if they lay them in there, great.
It seems to work if you put the floral tubes in there before you put the geckos in there. At least somebody said that, because then they recognize it as a laying site. But if you add it later, they won't necessarily.
As opposed to some kind of new invention.
Yeah, I read that somewhere.
Newfangled things.
Yeah. And then I think the best way, after having... you know, done this for a while, is to have two vivaria and put the adults in one for about 3 months, because the incubation period seems to be a little longer than 3 months. So you put the adults in there for about 3 months, move them out to another vivarium, and then the babies will start hatching. And you can have quite a few, depending on how many adults you put in. You could have, you know, if you have just two adults and they lay a clutch each every month, which, you know, is not unreasonable, then you could get 12 babies out of that just by, you know, and then switch them back and forth as the babies grow up, and you can get plenty of geckos that way just by removing the adults to a new place and having two vivariums and switch out. And by the time they're 3 or 4 months old, they're starting to get big enough that you can soon put them with the adults. I've put them in with the adults at 4 months because they're big enough. So, there you go.
Okay. So keep us posted on your gecko eggs. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. And we've got Tony in New York. He says, "Hello, Russ and Kelly. I spent another week adding plumbing to the fish room and also finished connecting up the RO unit. You got a lot done. This week I'm adding the feed pipe for new water and will also be plumbing 2 large brute trash cans for RO water and salt water. Russ, thank you for all the ideas regarding a pump with a large head height value. I have a friend who is supplying me with a medical-grade IV dosing pump. Wow. And I'm going to experiment with that in order to see if it works. I'm going to continue digesting your ideas and other ideas, too. Figuring out this piece of the puzzle will allow me to finally move in the new tank and fishes." And he says, "Kelly, also, I absolutely love all your ideas for dance. Sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, including the Doctor Who goldfish is brilliant." Were we talking about Rory and Pondy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. "I'm going to have to think of some more ideas for my video, too. So far, I think there will be a lot of candles. Kind of like Kung Fu, the legend continues." "Goldfish, take the pebble from my hand." "Until next time, make mine Aquarimax. Tony from New York."
Cool.
Very good. Sounds like he got a lot done in his fish room this week.
Yeah. Yep, I'm looking forward to pictures as soon as we can get them. And now we're going to move to the YouTube. I don't think it's that one. That's a different YouTube. Got a lot. Those are just people subscribing. Sorry, folks. I'm fishing here, looking for it. Ah, is that it? No. Where is it? Sorry, this is the embarrassing part. I could sing a little song.
Would we get sued if I hummed the Jeopardy theme?
Would we get sued?
Yeah.
Probably not. But this is crazy because...
Just go to your YouTube page. Don't go to your email. How about this? "Where's the fish comment from your YouTube video?"
Okay. Here it is.
"About the betas."
Oh, that's pretty good.
See, especially I'm pretty good.
Off the cuff like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty good. I think I've... Okay, the person who is asking us questions, who has been asking some questions lately...
Do we have a name?
Is Sai.
Okay.
Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Sai. But...
How do you spell it?
How do you spell it?
Mm-hmm.
S-A-I.
Oh, well, that's what I would say then.
That's what...
But
yeah.
I don't know.
And Sai mentions... an origin in India.
Oh, okay. So we have Sai from India.
Mm-hmm. And there have been several comments, and we've been kind of communicating. And the latest was about conditioning. Well, all of them relate to conditioning.
Sai is wanting to breed betas. That's why he's watching the beta video, yes.
Right, and has been commenting on various beta videos.
Okay.
And has been having some problems with the betas not spawning. And you can go ahead and start reading right there if you like.
He says, "I would like to know whether conditioning male betas and female betas is important for breeding. As my male betas are doing bubbles and inviting the females, but she's not going below his nest, and I don't know why. I'm feeding her good high-protein pellets and bloodworms. She does show vertical stripes, too, but she's not impressed. Maybe he's not cute enough."
Maybe.
"This is happening not only in my one pair of bettas, but I have 2 other pairs as well. Please help me in this. What shall I do? Water temperature is 29 degrees Celsius."
Okay.
What does that work out to?
29 degrees Celsius.
Fahrenheit.
Well, it's
so he
warm.
Has 3 pairs of bettas that he's trying to get to breed.
And yes.
And none of them are...
And the females seem particularly interested.
Do you think they're too young? Does he know how old his females are?
You know, that's a good point, because sometimes female bettas are too young in the pet store to breed, or at least, I shouldn't say too, I don't know. At least they're not mature. They don't have mature eggs, is what I could say. 29 Celsius is about 84 degrees Fahrenheit. Nice.
Is that too hot, or is that good, or?
Well,
I don't remember.
80 is what's usually recommended. It doesn't have to be exactly 80. I imagine 84 is probably good. If you get past 85, it starts being less than ideal. So 84 is on the high end, but I would hardly say prohibitive. I mean, I'm sure there are places outside where they are breeding in water like that. I wouldn't worry about that too much.
And he didn't indicate if he has a heater on the tank or if that's just the ambient temperature.
Well, he indicated before. He was asking whether he needed a heater, and I said I suggested one because he didn't have one.
What was his water temperature at before?
I don't know if he mentioned that. But I said, if your temperature is below 72, as another beta breeder mentioned on the comments too, April mentioned that and said, you know, if it's below 72, it could be a problem. And I agreed. Said, yeah, if it's below 72, I wouldn't recommend trying it. High 70s would probably be fine, but 80s is what usually recommended. So he went and got a heater. He or she, I'm not sure if it's a he or she, got the heater. And so that's good. But one thing is that, sometimes I've seen bettas in pet stores where the females are not ready. They're not carrying eggs yet. And so you need to keep them for a little while to get to the point where
keep them away from
start
the male
developing a
for a
eggs.
While. Well, they still have a chance to.
And you do want to, it's not good for them to always be right there with the male, but you do want them to be close as possible to the male without actually touching him for a week or so.
So you could put them in two different containers where they can see each other when they want to, but she has a place to go away to also.
One way is to do that. Put them in adjacent containers, like put a jar up next to the aquarium where the male is, because you want the male to be in a larger breeding tank.
Because he's got to make the nest.
Yeah, but the female can be in a smaller container. That's one way that people do it. Or you could just have them in adjacent tanks. Another way, though, that people do it is to put the female in, and this is something that if you could go back and listen to our podcast with Carlos, who was kind enough to do an interview on how to breed bettas with us, which was our inspiration guidance for breeding bettas. And he said that he uses, and this is, I guess it's a common item that betta breeders use, is get a hurricane lamp.
Oh, with that shape of the
right, which is essentially glass. A cylinder. It's a funnily shaped cylinder, but it's
wider at the bottom.
Yeah, it's wider in the bottom.
It's kind of like a chimney.
But it's got a hole on one end and a hole on the other end, and because of that, you can set it down in the tank, and the water. There's going to be some transfer of water between what's inside and outside, especially when you lift it up a little bit. But that allows apparently some chemicals, you know, maybe pheromones or something in the water that allows the male and female to communicate chemically. And because they can do that, but they still can't touch each other, kind of gets them ready. The female starts producing
a little bit more receptive.
The eggs start to ripen and the female can get more receptive and they can court through the glass. And then when she seems completely ready, you just lift it up. And she's already used to the water because she's in that same water temperature and the same water chemistry, essentially. So
that's a good idea.
It makes it easy. And that's what we did, except we found a glass cylinder. It wasn't a hurricane lamp.
That's true.
But it was just the same diameter all the way, up and down. But it was, I don't remember what it was. We just bought it at a thrift store.
It was just some random piece of glass? I don't remember.
It was just a straight cylinder. Mm-hmm. And that worked a treat. We put her in there, and after a week or so, they were ready. But we do have to mention that we had two different males we were going to try to spawn. The first male wouldn't really build a nest.
He wasn't, yeah.
Was it he wouldn't build a nest? I think that's what it was. He just wasn't
interested
in building a nest.
He just wouldn't really build a nest.
So we got another male and he...
No, you know what it was? Was this the second one? One of them was like, he was really nice to her, but he was too nice, so she'd come over and eat the eggs.
Well, no, that was the one who ended up spawning.
Okay, that was the second
second
guy?
Yeah, the first one.
The first guy just, he wanted to go live a quiet life by himself.
Yeah, he just wasn't building a nest, and we figured. And sometimes, I guess you can add the female, and she will stimulate interest in the nest. But she was in the little tube in the tank, and she didn't lay anything. I mean, she didn't seem very interested. He didn't seem very interested. Nothing was working. So we got another male originally to just get the first male interested. But then we realized when the second male was building a nest, and he was a nice-looking male, we put him in, and he built a nest. It wasn't a great nest, but it doesn't need to be that big. It just needs to be a nest. They'll often add to it after they lay the eggs and so on. So it wasn't very big, but it was something. And so he had built this nest. We put the female in, and we left them, you know, checking on them frequently, but left them for a while. And eventually she laid the eggs and then began to eat the eggs.
Because he was too nice?
Mm-hmm. And that's how I discovered that there were eggs in there.
Because she was eating
them. I looked in there, and they were both under the nest, and I thought, oh, great, maybe they're going to spawn. That's good, and I was excited, but then I saw an egg fall from the nest, and she ate it.
And then we took her out, didn't we?
Yeah, and then I started reaching for the net and saw her do it again, and she had eaten two or three eggs by the time I got her out.
Naughty girl.
But it worked out nicely, because we got, like, 50, 52 betas, something like that.
Just, it was a good was number. Perfect. Yeah.
At any rate, they won't always, not every pair is compatible, but you can always try taking the female out, conditioning them for a week or so, away from the male, then putting her back in, inside of the male, or better yet, inside in the tank in a lamp or a tube of glass, and then finally releasing her when she looks ready. I do believe that the conditioning is important, and I do believe, at least this is my personal belief, and I'm not going to back it up with a lot of empirical evidence, but I'm just going to say I think live food makes a difference. I'm not the only one who thinks so. Probably there are others who disagree with me, but I think live food makes a difference in conditioning fish for breeding.
I don't see why it would not make a difference, why people would even argue. I mean, you look at the difference that real, whole, fresh food versus processed food has for people.
Right.
And it just, you know, makes sense that live food would be good.
Yeah. And I think you can have really high quality other kinds of food too. But the thing is, if you have live food, one thing that people have said, many people have cited, this is not my original thought process, but when you release live food into the tank frequently, You're simulating a couple of things. One, the rainy season, which is when a lot of fish breed, in more stagnant areas, you're getting influx of water via rain, and you're also getting a lot of insects that are going to be seeking out water to breed in, like mosquitoes. And so it's kind of a trigger, a signal. Oh, live food is available. Ah, it must be time to spawn because there's more water. You know, it's kind of connected.
All, yeah, that makes sense.
And another one is if you're in a less stagnant body of water, such as a river, you're going to get water runoff. You know, rain is going to collect in the high parts of the river and go downstream. And as it does, it's going to be collecting terrestrial insects, which are going to flow by and the fish are going to eat them. So either way, they're going to get a higher influx of insects during that time. Also, during the dry season, a lot of times, fish get in situations where there's really not that much food. But in the wet season, there's more. And they know that, oh, that's, well, I shouldn't say they know, but it's kind of triggers them. This is the time to breed.
That makes sense.
And so, by giving them large quantities of live food, and it doesn't have to be huge quantities. I mean, you don't want to overfeed them. But when we spawned our bettas, for example, that time, we gave them a few Daphnia each. You know, maybe two or three Daphnia each every day in addition to their other food. For a week, a week and a half, something like that. And it worked great. And that's not the only time we've ever used live food for conditioning. Generally, when I want to spawn any fish, I make sure they get live food fairly frequently, hopefully. Ideally, at least once a day. And hopefully a variety of live food, like give them grindle worms one day and Daphnia next day, and scuds the next day, and whatever, fruit flies the next day. And it really seems to work. So, I would suggest if you have the ability to give them live food, that you do so. I think it helps.
There you go.
Yep. All right, I think that's all we have for this week. And thanks to all our contributors. Thank you for listening. And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.